next case this morning is number 044220, Thomas Bubolo against Alan Carter. Mr. Bowen.
May it please the court,
counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors.
On October 23rd, 2002, at an awards dinner for a Kuten Kenpo group, which is a form of martial arts in Hawaii, Thomas Bubolo asked the defendant, Mr. Carter, to show him a move about moving people with his mind. Mr. Carter is an Asian Greek black belt, a world-class expert, and when he started showing him, instead of showing him basically how to move his mind, started hitting him with fried blows here and there, pulling his hair, putting him underground, and so forth.
Why didn't your client object at that point? What he expected?
Your Honor, you were having someone show you something, and this guy's a world-class expert. I don't think you say much of anything. I know I wouldn't know anything.
Well, I mean, your contention is he just wanted a demonstration of how he could move by his mind. And when something else is going on, is appropriate for him to object at that point? He's been pushed around so far.
Well, he assumes this guy is an expert. He assumes also this guy he's talking to basically, he's got a CV this long. He knows what he's doing. He's not going to hurt him. This is a Christian ministry thing. He doesn't know that. You know, he's not a world-class expert. And in fact, I don't believe Mr. Carter intentionally meant to hurt
my client.
Your client said he was having fun, didn't he?
But some points in time he was. He was in whatever. He didn't realize he was doing so just a short time later. Obviously, something went wrong in this picture. Judge Steele granted a summary judgment based on the context for its exception. My ground is that there was no contact in this particular application of karate. There's no doubt that karate is a contact sport. If this was a match, a contest, we have a heated competition going on, then the contact sports exception should operate. It makes some sense. In this particular case, Mr. Bubolo stood there. He did not take a defensive stance. He was not told he was going to be hit. He obviously wasn't told he was going to get hit hard enough in the neck to require a neck fusion and later disability. He was not told to protect himself. I think once this happens, you take it out of the contact sports exception. In that you don't have rational of the context sports exception basically in the heat of the heat of sports competition. Like in wide world sports, you got the throw of victory and the agony of defeat. But here you don't have that. You don't have a contest where there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. Someone's striving to say I won or someone is going to lose. Mr. Bubolo was just standing there and he was basically was a punching bag for Mr. Carter. I think the cases to look at actually are the non-contact ones, the Zola case, which involved ball, which was determined not to be a contact sport, and the Novak case, which was a skiing case, which also was not to be a contact sport. And the rationale in determining whether it is or not, these cases then was what was the expectation of the participants? Were they expecting some kind of impairment of physical contact? Were they expecting a possible injury? Were they expecting that things would happen? And the court in these cases said no, it was not a reasonable expectation. And likewise, under this circumstance, you know, it was not a match, it was not a competition. It was just simply a demonstration of moving someone with his mind. My client did not participate or volunteer to participate in a contact sport. He was not prepared for physical contact, and that was maybe one of the reasons why he was hurt. If he was told to take a defensive stance, if he was told to protect himself, then he would have been raised with the but he was not. As a result of this, I think neither did the contact was accepted, but my client had a serious injury, a very serious injury, that was not his fault. He was just standing there. Again, we have a mixed question of law and fact here, whether or not there was his fault or neither threshold was contact was accepted. Again, some sports are wrong. This particular application was not wrong. Again, he did not agree to contact. He was not warned of contact. Nobody expected contact. If you assume for a moment that he was in a sparring match here, where he would expect some contact. If you're a world-class expert against some
I was on the gallery, and he was not extra here. And he's not straight, for example. And he gets hurt with the same injury. Again, would that qualify as a contact sports exception? I would say no. Under the ground, again, you got this theory of this, basically, a world-class expert against a non-world-class expert. If the world-class expert can get hurt, no one should get hurt. In this case, someone did get hurt. And I do wish to point out that all of the cases in Illinois, all of these cases involve actual contests or competitions of some kind. It could be informal, it could be sweeping the can or playing in the room, it could be formal contests, but again, they're all contests, not demonstrations, not they show you how to do this, that kind of thing. Again, it's like, say, you're a normal high school football player, you go see Dick Butkus. You see him, you say, hey, can you show me how you sacked Ruben Gabriel in that Los Angeles game 25 years ago? And you expect him just to go down and do this whatever, and also he knocks you into the next century. This is similar to that. This is not a competition. There wasn't a heat of battle, so to speak, in this particular circumstance, and therefore, should not, the context for exception should not be used to deny my client basically damages for his serious injuries. In regard to the judge also granted some judgment on the issue of World War I. And again, was the defendant part of the reckless in this case? Again, he's a world-class expert, an 8th grade Kujo Kendo black belt. Again, I don't believe he intentionally hurt Mr. Bellow, but when he has taught for years, he's had hundreds of students, and when he's hitting some guy, again, not a contest, I think there's a presumption or a question of fact for the jury that yes, maybe he was reckless on this one occasion. Maybe he overdid it. In a case like this, you shouldn't end up, again, with a ruptured disc in the neck needing a titanium plate fusion. It's almost like a race to the rubber case. Something would have gone wrong unless someone did something wrong. There's one other additional issue. Ron, I'll be back after this.
May it please the court, Mr. Parker, gentlemen, Mr. Mallon has admitted, in effect, there's no willful and wanton case here. He said he didn't intend, my client did not intend to harm the plaintiff. The cases dealing with what is willful and wanton describe willful and wanton conduct as actual intent to harm or deliberate intent to harm. Mr. Mallon has admitted in all the evidences there was no actual or deliberate intent to harm. What we have in this case is, yes, Mr. Carter is an expert. He's an 8th degree. Mr. Bevelow, however, was no babe in the woods. He'd been doing this for several years and, in fact, was at a ceremony to be promoted from one belt to another. He had been in tournaments. He came to this event to warm up and to spar. And he did warm up, but didn't spar. He had signed a waiver, and I'm not pleading waiver in this case. We're not relying on waiver. But the point of the waiver is it says you acknowledge you're getting into a sport where there can be unintended harm. He came to Mr. Carter and said, according to some of the testimony, I want you to show how you can move me with your mind without touching me. Well, that can't be done. What Mr. Carter demonstrated to him was a series of kaijukenbu and restraint techniques that took a fair amount of time. And if you read the evidence, it was progressive in its nature. It started out slowly, it went to this, it went to that.
Does the record show how long this demonstration took?
I don't believe it in terms of time. I don't believe it says how long. But there were people there taking pictures. There were family members. There were friends. They were laughing. And they were demonstrating pressure points. They were hitting him twice on the arm, gripping by the hand. He was down on his knees, pulled his hair back as a control device. He was on the ground before he was struck in the neck, in the appendix, C-37, before Mr. Bubalo was struck in the neck, he was on the ground at least twice by Mr. Carter. Well, at some point, if you're not expecting conduct, you say, hey, wait a minute, pal, I didn't ask for this. Show me how you move me with your mind. And you can't move somebody with your mind. Sometimes, I wish I could. Maybe there are people who can. I haven't met them. Although sometimes judges are rather intimidating and can move you with their mind, but generally there's something else that comes along with it. What began in this case, Mr. Barlow was hurt. And Mr. Mallon says that he didn't expect to be hurt. Well, if you do all of this context for its exception cases, the softball player didn't expect to get his knee blown out when he was just fielding a softball. The hockey player didn't expect to get his eye put out when a plastic puck hit him in the eye. The football players, the soccer player didn't expect to get kicked in the head when he was within the zone where you're not allowed to kick somebody in the head. None of them expects to be injured in a pickup kick the can game. In the Fister versus Schuster, it's a kick the can game. I'm sure the plaintiff in the Fister case didn't expect to go through a plate glass window playing kick the can. But it happens, and everybody knows it happens, and nobody wants it to happen. And what the Illinois courts have decided is, if it's just an accident in a game where there's contact, we've made a public policy decision to say, you're not responsible if it's just ordinary negligence. It has to be willful and wanton. And it's not here in this case. So what the judge of the lower court, Judge Steele, who would have to pass on this before he set the case to the jury, had the evidence before him, and this was the same evidence that was going to come in at trial. He was going to have to make a decision, do I send this case to the jury or not? And he made the decision, I'm sorry, Judge.
Mr. Plunkett, I was just concerned about Mr. Allen's submission to us that this just isn't a game. This was really a demonstration. It was a lesson. The contact, the board exception, really doesn't. From a policy point of view, it just is a bad fit to that kind of a situation. I wonder if you could respond to that.
Yes, sir. In the Keller versus Mills case, which the Illinois Appellate Court in 1987 said that the question of whether a sports participant may be liable for injuries to another player covered by their negligence is determined by whether the participants were involved in a contact sport, not by whether participants in the activity were organized and coached. So if you're going to draw that final line, that if a master is teaching a student how to do something he's not covered, no coach is going to be able to tell a hockey player how to check. No coach is going to be able to tell a grade school football player how to block. No coach is going to be able to tell a basketball player how to move out from under the boards.
Well, it just can't be negligent the way it goes back.
Well, you and I may have difference of opinion. I think you can be willful and wrong about how he goes about it.
Well, my point is, if the exception doesn't apply, the negligence rule would apply.
Absolutely. Then maybe the exception does not apply, then the negligence rule applies. Correct. Well, yes, sir. Yes, sir, that's correct.
And so he has some protection. He just needs to make sure he's not negligent.
He would have some protection. However, the cases address that, and they say it's a public policy decision that no one has made. There's a balancing test. Do we want to chill someone's ability to participate, or do we want to give them the free ability to participate as long as they're not willful and wanton? Because we don't want them to second guess every single injury that occurs in every single sport. Now, if you want to draw a line in coaching, you can draw the line in coaching. With all due respect, I don't believe the Illinois courts have done that, and I don't believe the law in Illinois is there's a line between coaches and sports and team play. What there is a line with participants. So the question is, one of the questions is Mr. Bevelo and is Mr. Carter a participant when a man comes up and says, show me how to do this?
This started out as a the first thing that occurred at this gathering was a warm-up, and then some of the participants sparred.
Some did, Mr. Bevelo did not. His time ran out.
And this demonstration occurred, was it before a group?
I believe it was after the sparring, and this man was a
featured speaker as an eighth-degree black belt, and people came up to him, and there was a line of people, some, including Mr. Bevel, I would like my son's picture taken with you because you're a star in this sport, and he was the featured speaker, and he was there to speak, he was there to give, to tell people, to answer questions, to show people what they wanted to know, and when you go before, you're an orange belt, you go to an eighth-degree belt, one of the obvious questions is, how do you get where you are? What do you have to do? How do you do
that? Okay, I and colleagues have both briefed the question of Illinois law here. In your research, did you come across cases from other states, though? Does the Illinois rule, is this a majority rule that was used in many states, or is it something that Illinois has developed on its own?
It's used in many states. I know it's used in Missouri. It's used in other states. We found states from other areas, but
Have other states addressed the question that we had before us here, whether or not a demonstration of the sport is covered by the contact sports exception?
If there were, Judge. I'd like to read, make sure I haven't forgotten. Right. And as far as this man not being told he was going to be hurt, as I said in the other cases, the softball player was never told he was going to be run into. The soccer goalie was never told he was going to be kicked in the head. Kick the can player was never told he was going to be going through the glass window. It happens. And society in Illinois has said we don't want to punish people for that. And if Dick Butkus comes in and knocks him in the middle of the next century, that's willful and wanton conduct. And he's responsible for that. Now, I leave you with the Landon versus Gonzalez case in 1994. The court said, in this case, plaintiff argues the relevant inquiry should not be the objective question of whether the game of softball is a contact sport, but whether physical contact at this game was within the party's subjective expectations. Plaintiff argues because he had never seen anyone injured in one of the softball games, it is unreasonable to say he expected bodily contact. We believe, however, claims arguments ignore the clear rationale of the court's opinion in Keller, in which the court determined that whether the players were organized and coached was not relevant to the question of whether floor hockey was a contact sport. The Keller decision makes clear the issue is properly resolved by examining the objective factors surrounding the game itself, not on the subjective expectations of the parties. And if you look at this case, the surrounding circumstances of what was going on was a lower degree karate, a higher degree karate. The lower degree went to the higher degree, said, show me some things. He started showing them. They were progressively more physical, and what happened was an accident. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, counsel. So you have 3 minutes.
Right. To take the analogy Mr. Plunker used, did Mr. Bevelo swing a ball and run to first base? Did he try to tackle somebody? Did he try to shoot a basket? Did he try to shoot a puck in the goal? No. He stood there. He stood there without a world-class expert being about him. Who he trusted to be there with a world-class expert? Was he a participant? Should he be held in here to represent subjectively, objectively? There was no argument at all. And Mr. Bell was stood there the entire time. He was surprised when he started being humble. What did he do? He was not a participant in any type of competition. And therefore,
yes, filters. The masters teach them by putting laying hands on and moving them around. It does a regular master, not this particular guy, but to whoever was teaching
this wasn't a demonstration or teaching. He was just standing there. He wasn't take a stance, protect yourself. It wasn't that. This case in particular, he was just standing there doing nothing. Taking blows. He was a punching bag. He wasn't told to take a stance, protect yourself, or anything else. He was not a participant. If he was not a participant, then the contact sports exception should not apply. It's that simple. Again, if he was an actual medical disaster, then he's out of luck. But he wasn't. He was just standing there.
In what respect is there negligence in this case?
I would think, Your Honor, that the world-class expert hit this, somehow hit him wrong. I mean, you don't cause rotary disc and fusion on someone who actually is not in bad shape unless you do something wrong.
Race ipsa situation.
Pardon?
Is it a race ipsa situation?
I think you made an argument.
I mean, no one's heard before someone had to do something wrong. The car is probably a fairly serious injury to someone who's, you know, not exactly not an athlete, but not exactly out of shape either. And my last point, Your Honor, is that I did not admit it was not willful. One, I don't believe it was intentional. I don't think Mr. Carr did it intentionally. However, the law and the cases you talk about, reckless disregard, going back to your question, res ipsa, they shouldn't have happened unless somebody did something wrong. And if you got those kind of, if you got skillful and you misuse those skills, then it could be a reckless disregard, and that should be a question for the jury. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. Indeed, our thanks to both Mr. Howell and Mr. Plunkett for their very vigorous and thoughtful presentations today. The case will be taken under advisement.